Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John. John Engineering on the other side of the glass and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, March 22nd, 2022, now in our 12th year here on the radio. We broadcast from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to the state capitol. State Representative Pamela Powers Hanley, Democrat representing District Number 9. Representative Hanley, how are you?
Very good. How are you, Bill?
Doing real well. Let's talk a little bit about this session. How would you characterize it so far?
Well, it's pretty wild is what I would say. This is the last week for committee meetings. And so we heard quite a few bills yesterday in health. Ironically, we only have a couple for ways and means tomorrow, but we have one that is the biggest expansion of empowerment scholarships, that's school vouchers, ever in the state of Arizona. You might remember that the voters a few years ago said they didn't want any more vouchers. Well, there are people up here who are not listening. So it's a pretty crazy time with rumors about special sessions. There's different ideological bills being pushed. And so more of the same, as usual, up here in Phoenix.
It seems this session is front-loaded with all this talk of what is referred to as election reform and issues surrounding legislators getting involved in the classroom.
Yes, definitely. Those are two big deals. The voter suppression bills, the last count I heard was that we're up to maybe 140. Now, many of those, I think, are duplicates or sort of duplicates, but still, I think this just really horrendous for the voters of the state of Arizona. We had a big turnout in 2020, and the Republicans are trying to knock that back for the next election. And so it's very concerning. They're looking at making it harder to register people to vote, and then they're also putting gobs and gobs of regulations on top of the county recorders and the secretary of state with, of course, no appropriation to do all these extra duties. And so it's really wild, and it's not good for our state. I think that they are sowing chaos into the election system with these bills. And, you know, I mean, we can plead to Governor Ducey to maybe veto some of them, but I think a lot of them are unfortunately going to pass.
Well, this one that came out of committee, I was surprised it even came out of the Senate committee, that would require all ballots to be counted. They'd have to be counted by hand. We had Senator Messnard, J.D. Messnard, on the show on Friday, and he said there's no way that all of that could be done in a 24-hour period, counting millions of ballots by hand.
I know. What do they think? We're still a territory?
I mean, don't get
crazy,
it.
Huh?
It's crazy.
Yeah, they're not. A lot of these things are just not workable, you know, and they're hearkening back. A lot of it is hearkening back to an earlier time, like maybe 1850, you know, so. I mean, it's just the mandates for everybody votes only on election day. I think that one's dead. But I mean, there are some really, really terrible bills out there. And you all, like you said, they're also messing with education in big ways. This ESA expansion tomorrow in Ways and Means is bad. We are hearing that next week in appropriations, there's a 100-page striker to remake education funding in the state of Arizona. And so if it's a 100-page striker going through only appropriations, that means it completely bypassed all of the committee hearings that it should have had, or even, you know, public hearings during the interim. If they're going to redo funding for public education in the state, that's something that has to have the people involved in. You know, we have bills that say the parents should be able to look at the lesson plans in
yes.
advance and the book lists in advance. Well, you know, there are Democrats and Republicans who say that the school financing formulas need to be changed. Like, for example, I didn't realize until recently that we are one of seven states that does not have a poverty weight in how schools are funded. So that's why the poor schools are kept poor. You know, we're not figuring in poverty and the extra things that those students might need because of their home situation or lack of a home. And so, yeah, it's just totally wild.
And trying to get critical race theory,
there's all sorts of stuff.
It's hard enough to try to recruit teachers and to retain teachers in this state. But now you have this, the backers of that bill say, oh, this is transparency, that every time a student says anything to a teacher that the parents have to be informed about it. That's really discouraging, I think, teachers from wanting to work in this state.
Yeah, that's very discouraging for teachers, but it's also, you know, not safe for kids because sometimes kids are telling their teachers what's going on, you know, like my dad hit me. Or the teachers also, if they see a kid coming in with a bruise, they have a right to report child abuse. And so this is a child safety issue also, because sometimes the teacher or maybe the guidance counselor or the school nurse is the trusted person in that kid's life. And so to turn around and tell the parents everything, sometimes the parents are the problem, you know, and so that's bad. They also, but the critical race theory with, you know, not talking about any subject with malice or bad intent or something like that. Well, slavery was a bad thing. We should be able to say it was a bad thing, and that, you know, long-term racism and sexism are bad things. But, you know, with those critical race theory bills, you know, teachers can't touch on those subjects, or they could get fined or lose their licenses. And, you know, we already had a teacher shortage. I think teachers are just going to leave the profession or leave the state, because it's just one attack after another from the legislature against the profession of teaching. And what they want to do is they want to privatize it all and have their cronies make money, you know.
State Representative Pamela Powers Hanley, Democrat District 9, which is the central Tucson area, with us. You had, I believe, 8 housing bills that you proposed during this session. What happened to them?
Well, nothing happened to them, even the one that passed the House last year, which was my Truth in Renting. And it's interesting because yesterday in the Health Committee, we heard a few different bills about homelessness. You know, but there was no indication that there was any role of poverty in homelessness or any role in skyrocketing rents. You know, the people were just saying, gosh, there's a lot of homeless people on the street. What should we do? And how did this happen? Well, you know, you look at my housing bills, and I was looking at preemption of local control, which a lot of things that the city could try, they can't try because the legislature has preempted the innovation. And then you also look at the idea of the skyrocketing rents, you know, and transparency in the leases. And so we should be looking at trying to keep people in their houses rather than trying to help them out once they've, you know, lost their apartment and lost everything and they're living on the street. I mean, there are things that we could do that would be more cost effective to keeping everybody housed. And so, my housing bills didn't go anywhere, but I am making a big deal about prevention. Because prevention in medicine is always cheaper than treatment. And in housing, keeping people housed, prevention is going to be cheaper and better for them, better for their children. If people get evicted, sometimes their children go to foster care, you know. And so it's just cascading events when you allow so many people to be evicted and allow these rents to get out of reach for so many people. So I'm on my soapbox still, Bill.
Well, that's all right. And this session may go all the way to the end of June. Senator Mesnard was saying last year that was the case, where you basically stop the clock when it hits June 30th until the budget is passed. And the budget hasn't even come up yet, has it?
Well, what's going on was, since we had that court case last year, all these little things that had nothing to do with the budget were stuffed into the budget, and the court said you can't do that. So we have been hearing all these little tiny appropriation bills or other bills separately this year, because the court said we can't do it the way we used to. And so we are hearing bits of the appropriation and bits of the budget. But the other thing is that there are so many rumors about special sessions. You know, you might have heard about the water authority that Doug Ducey wants to create.
Yep.
They talk about a special session for that. That is another thing that should have public input and should be a whole process. You know, if we're going to hand $1 billion over to an unelected quasi-governmental body that has basically no oversight, the public should know about it and have some input and have a chance to say, heck no, you know, or maybe you should do it differently. But there's a lot happening, and I'm hoping that they're not going to push it to June 30th because that's not going to be good for the people, I don't think.
All right.
That means that there are extreme agenda items that they're going to try to force through, like the repeal and replace of the flat tax. You know, the voters said we wanted to put the flat tax on the ballot, and the Republicans want to do a repeal and replace. So all of the work that the voters did to get that on the ballot will be for naught if they get that passed.
So, all right, Pamela Powers.
Lots of stuff happening.
Pamela Powers Hanley, thank you for the legislative update. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Bill. Have a good day.
You too. State Representative Hanley, District 9 Democrat. Mona's Danish Bakery, open right now for lunch. I've discovered something new at Mona's, thanks to the wonderful dentist who did my root canal on Friday. He said, have you tried Mona's Bear Claw? And I said, no. So I did try one Sunday. I can't tell you how wonderful it was. Mona's Danish Bakery, all of their products are great. Go to their website, monasdanishbakery.com. There's beautiful pictures of everything they have on the menu and in the bakery case. They're located northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Open right now for lunch. Open at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast, Tuesday through Sunday. See you at Mona's. All right, up next, Shelley Fishman with me in studio. Two thumbs up. We're back with Shell after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Shelly Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelly through buckmastershow.com or at shellyfishman.com.
And it's Tuesday and the markets are up for a change. Actually, things have been looking pretty good on Wall Street.
Last week was wonderful.
Yeah,
Bill,
it was a good week. Good recovery week, or beginning of a recovery.
Yesterday we had an uncomfortable beginning of the week, and today we've made up for it.
Because Mr. Powell said some things, but...
Well, yeah. You know, the crazy thing is every time you think it's bad news, the market reacts well.
Yes.
And every time you think it's good news, the market says, what's going on here, and reacts poorly. It drives you nuts.
I want to talk a little bit about Social Security.
Yeah.
We haven't brought this up on the show in a long time. And there is the age-old question, and the beginning point is, where and what age should I take Social Security?
That's a great question, and experts disagree on what the answer should be. So I'm going to give you the Shelly Fishman version of what the right answer is. The first thing to understand is you can take Social Security early at age 62. However, you will pay a penalty of about 8% per year between the time you start taking Social Security and your full Social Security retirement age. And that's about between 62 and 67, let's say. It's about 5 years. So 5 times 8 is about 40%. That's a discount that you're going to get for the rest of your life. The first answer to the question is, if you need the money, because you need the money, mm-hmm. you don't have a choice. It's not a question. You take it.
Mm-hmm.
If, however, you have the ability to wait and you don't absolutely need the money, then the next point at which you make a decision would be your full Social Security retirement age. And for most people now coming up on that, it's 67.
Okay.
For me, it was 65 and four mm-hmm. months. But it's let's call it 67. And that's when you get 100% of your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you wait till age 70, you'll pick up about 8% a year for those next 3 years if you don't take it. So, you know, you say, well, wow, that's a pretty good idea. I'll just wait. Since I don't need the money, I'll wait until I'm 70 and then get a 24% kind of increment to my full retirement benefit.
It sounds like a bonus if you wait
it
till 70.
It is a bonus, except wait a second.
Yeah.
So for 3 years, you've given up
yes.
100% each year mm-hmm. of your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get a 24% increment at age 70, 71 going forward. So do the math. Let's see. 3 years, 300% divided by 24% comes out to about 8 years. Mm-hmm. No, 8, 16, 24. Yeah, mm-hmm. about eight years before you break even.
Mm-hmm.
So you've given up 300%.
Yes.
You've gotten a 24% increment.
Yeah.
It takes you about 8 years
mm-hmm.
To break even. And if you didn't need the money, you probably invested those 3 years worth. So you mm-hmm. got some gains on that. As a general rule, your break even is around age 82.
Mm-hmm.
So the bet you make by waiting
Yes.
Until age 70 is that you're going to make it to age 82.
Mm-hmm.
Statistically, you will. However, if you're not sure about that, and you'd rather have the money rather than wait, then my vote is take the money at your full retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
There's another factor involved, which is if you and a spouse have a big disparity in your incomes or a big disparity in your age, it makes sense for the older person to wait until age 70, because then the younger person can get the older person's Social Security when that older person dies. And if there's a significant difference in age, the likelihood is the older person will die first. So as I always say to these questions, discuss this with somebody who really knows. Don't take my word for it. Talk to your financial advisor or make an appointment with Social Security. Do not just drop into their office. If you do, you will die of old age waiting.
Wait, yes, you will.
To get in.
So all the
but if you make an appointment, they're really very good about keeping those appointments.
The worry about bankruptcy of Social Security, is it going to be around? What about that?
So Social Security was fixed in the Reagan administration.
Mm-hmm.
Those fixes, which extended the retirement age, you know, a couple of years, phased it in over time and made some other changes, those fixes have worked for about 50 years. I'm not a big fan of the Reagan administration, but this one they got absolutely right. So the Social Security Trust Fund will be able to maintain Social Security at its current levels until 2034. So that's 12 years from now, at which point it is broke. The trust fund will have no more money in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Social Security will have to be paid by the people contributing to it every year, pay the people who are retired. Except there's a problem, because we're not having kids as at the rate that we used to, and the whole post-war baby boomer generation is putting a big tax on the system. And so it is forecast that starting in 2034, 2035, and inflation gets to move those numbers around a little bit, that the benefits will have to be cut by about 25%, even for people currently getting that Social Security. And then it'll be good for another 20 years or so, and then we're in trouble again. So the question is, why doesn't Congress do something about it?
Why don't they?
Because it's Congress.
Right.
And Congress only works really well when they've got
a big deadline looming.
A deadline looming gun to their head.
Right.
So every time you talk about fixing Social Security, you know, that's the third rail of politics.
Sure.
And you know, Congress people understand that if they wait just a little longer, and they have a gun to their heads, then nobody will be blamed for fixing things.
Mm-hmm.
The fixes, by the way, are going to be painful for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You know, one way to fix Social Security is to cut the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody wants to do that.
No.
Another way to raise it is, you know, there's a cap on Social Security taxes that are paid by people who are currently working. You pay... It's 12.4, but if you work for somebody else other than yourself, you're paying about 6.2% of your income every year into Social Security until, and the number now is $147,000 of earnings,
mm-hmm.
at which point it's capped. No more Social Security payments. Mm-hmm. That's great, you say, except it's not paying, it's not you know, going to meet the need.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been talks of raising the cap until 160,000, 170,000, or leaving it at 147, then putting a gap in the cap until 200, 250,000, whatever it is, and then starting it again. So the vast majority of people who would benefit from the cap would be okay, but those people who make a lot more than that would start having to pay again. So that would begin to fill the gap. Another way that you can begin to adjust Social Security is to raise the retirement age,
right,
as Reagan did in the 80s. So instead of age 67, maybe you gradually move it to age 68 and a half or something like that, since people are anyway working longer and are, you know, the life expectancy has grown. So the old, you know, retire at age 65, retire at age 66 or 67, that is being supplanted by people who work longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you've got a back-breaking job and you want to get out of there at 62 or 63 because your body can't handle it anymore.
Yeah.
So there's lots of ways at looking at the problem of fixing Social Security. There is no there is no way it can be ignored forever. But, you know, given the mood in Congress and just the polarization that we have in our politics in general, I wouldn't look for a fix, at least for, you know, the next 7 or 8 years. I can tell you that when polling is done, you know, Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Zers don't even think it's going to be there for them.
They don't.
And you know, if you think it's not going to be there for you, then now's the time to start saving, because Social Security makes up about 50 or 60% of the retirement income of people who are retired.
Okay, Shelley, great advice. Thank you very much. Have a great week, Shelley.
You too.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Zach Guido is coming up next, UA climate scientist. How will that summer rainy season shape up this year? We'll get maybe a little bit of a preview from Zach right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowlands 1 and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over 5 buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We love green things. And who wouldn't stop by their beautiful 13-acre site? And this is a very appropriate time of year. Stop by. We are now in the spring season. And one of the things, and I know I talk about it a lot, but their salespeople are so knowledgeable, and with our situation with the drought, you really need some things that are going to be able to kind of get by with a little less moisture, and the people at Green Things can point you in the right direction to put some beautiful color in the garden, and maybe things that don't really need a lot of water. 3384 East River Road, they're open daily. 51st year there, and they also have Zocalo Village, all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. GreenThingsAZ.com, check it out. You will not be sorry because they can take care of all of your gardening needs. Dr. Zach Guido is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at Arizona Institutes for Resilience. Arizona Institutes for Resilience is known as, appropriately enough, the acronym AIR, coordinating interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the UA campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thanks.
Very appropriate, serendipitous to have you here on World Water Day. We have lots to talk about today when it comes to water, but one of the things that's pretty darn dramatic is the rise in sea level forecast over the next 30 years. Zach, did you realize, you might know this, 40%, it's 4 out of 10 Americans live along the coast within a, 100 kilometers or 60 miles within water.
Prime real estate. I mean, I didn't know that number, yeah. But it's not surprising. And yeah, you're right with sea level rise projections. There's going to have to be quite a bit of adaptation, quite a bit of perhaps in some areas, even relocation. I know that's going on in certain places.
In the Pacific Islands, some of the Pacific Islands are doing that. But unfortunately, the human being kind of waits to the last till it's a real critical situation. We're just talking about Social Security with our financial contributor about how Congress, that's way down the road about worrying about it going bankrupt. But then you get water issues like this. We need to be planning.
Well, That's a really good point to make. And we don't, we sort of wait to the last minute. And with climate, you can't do that because it has a memory. And you may be able to move at the last minute, but if we're thinking about, slowing down the climate system from increased warming, then we need to be making decisions now that have effects, 20, 30, 50 years into the future. And, those are tough things to do, given all the challenges that we currently have. And so somehow you have to balance out and create opportunities and victories in the now that also are victories in the future. And sea level rise was a perfect example. I mean, we needed to plan for this decades ago.
Yes, we did.
And we're going to need to plan for this decades into the future. And a slow response will work for some, but it's better to get out in front of these things. So we need to have more forethought.
Well, we could use some dramatic water level increases in places like Lake Powell, which really now is at a historic low. How does that impact us here in Tucson?
Yeah, I mean, it's another example of needing to have the smartest minds thinking about how to deal with the water situation. Because, in the Southwest, I'm sure many of your listeners know the story, but you know, the Colorado River supplies about 40 million people and seven states in Mexico with water. We've built these really huge reservoirs that have worked well for the most part of history. You know, I think Lake Powell started to fill in the early 60s. And those reservoirs help provide the necessary water in times when, you know, the rain and the snow doesn't reach its needs or our needs. But they only work if those reservoirs are full. And, you know, since about the 2000s, you know, we've been in basically what's been going on is our demand, our use of the water in, I think, around 2003 surpassed the amount of water that's supplied to the reservoirs via rain and snow. And so we've been working in what's called this structural deficit. And so every single year, for the most part, we get less and less in those big basins. And we're now reaching those critical points. How the Colorado River is managed is beyond me. You kind of need a PhD to figure it out. But there's critical elevations that trigger different responses. And we've never experienced those elevations for Lake Powell until basically in the last couple months. It went below, I think the elevation is something like 3,525 feet.
You got it.
Yeah, that's off memory.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an important elevation because below which it puts the electricity generation in question.
Yes, it does.
And it undermines the integrity of the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to keep the water at that level, which then means that less water is delivered downstream to Lake Mead, and that affects the lower basin. And all of this is to say that this is an important issue to figure out. You know, we're going to have to make some hard choices. The smart people in the room about water allocations are going to have to make some hard choices about how to allocate less water than is currently allocated, and that is a tremendously challenging political issue.
And boy, could we use some water right this winter, because if you've seen here in Tucson, just a fraction of an inch in our first almost 3 months of 2022, looking like a very dry year. And of course, it kind of looked that way last winter, but we were saved by a robust summer rainy season. And then trying to predict these summer rainy seasons, we've talked about this on the program, it is really, really hard.
Yeah. So,
but is it kind of like throwing a dart to the dartboard? But I guess you and your team at the UA, you have made some predictions.
Yeah, so I'll get to the monsoon forecast bit in a minute. But yeah, this winter, I guess if you rewind 4 months or so coming into this winter, I think the expectation is that we'd be at this point that we currently are. And that was because of the emerging La Nina, which tends to bring drier than average conditions here to the Southwest. It's basically what we've experienced. And it has been, I think Tucson is right now for the winter at about 40% of average. Phoenix is close to 50% of average. Flagstaff is like 70% of average. It's been dry around the Southwest. And that follows on, you know, one winter ago was also very, very dry. So we've had back-to-back winters that thankfully sandwiched a really vigorous monsoon season and sort of saved us. We'd be having a different conversation, I think, just in terms of like vegetation and our psychology of drought had we not had that vigorous monsoon season. But yeah, to the point of forecasting the monsoon, I mean, we've talked about this a number of times.
Why don't you save your thought on the, yeah, we'll kind of tease that for after the break about your prediction for the summer rainy season. We'll take a break. We're with Zach Guido, UA climate scientist. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're talking about our great sponsor, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's a really not bad drive at all. It's about 3 hours, depending on where you are in Tucson. Pretty much hit I-10 to Lordsburg. Then just take the exit up to Silver City. And when I say up, you're going to climb up in elevation, get up into some pretty country, about that 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation. Check out Southwest New Mexico. Just spell that out, .org. Good starting place, where to stay, what to do. And there's all sorts of great activities over there in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We continue now with Dr. Zach Guido, our contributor on climate. He is also a UA climate scientist. David has been waiting very patiently, Zach, on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. David, what's on your mind?
Well, I want to bring up the principle of diminishing returns, okay? Over the years, we've had explosive growth in Arizona population. Our population now is almost 8 million, but our water consumption overall has been holding it the same because they've poached people to use less water per capita over the years. So as the water use per capita goes down, it compensates for the increase of population, but we're reaching the point of diminishing returns that you can't get people to use less water per capita. And if we keep scraping the desert, putting up more housing developments so more people can move here and use more water, our water consumption is going to go up, and we're going to be in a whole lot of trouble.
All right, David, good point about sustainability. And we've talked about this, Zach, on sessions before. How in the world is Arizona going to sustain the kind of growth we have?
That's the question. And, you know, I think there's two issues here with the water. You know, the first issue is in the Colorado River, and there's, you know, specific allocations that Arizona is allotted from the Colorado River, and that's not going to change. And if it stays the same, there's going to be problems with draining the reservoirs even faster. But there's mechanisms in place that
different levels, and we're in a level one already.
That ratchet down the use for Arizona and other states. And then there's the point of drawing on groundwater, which is another resource. And I think to the caller's point here that, you know, you can only get so much from conservation. And by the way, there's probably a lot that we could do, a lot of water conservation that could be made just by being more efficient, but it's not probably to the level that we're going to need. And just to the point of the Colorado River, something on the order of, you know, 15 million acre feet is used each year for all of the states, all of the seven states. Over the last 20 years, the average flow in the Colorado River has been 12.3 million acre feet. So it's a huge deficit that has to be made up. And yeah, if you want to exploit groundwater, it's a limited resource too. So I think we have to, I mean, I'm not a water expert, so and I just have opinions on this, but I would say that, you know, it's got to be a combination of being really smart and about how we use water, making it more efficient. But ultimately, decisions are going to have to be made about where the water that's available goes. Is it urban consumption? Is it, you know, farming? Is it other uses?
How the pieces of the pie are going to play out? That's the ultimate question. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about our summer rainy season. Was it, I think, let me see, third most productive rainy season since they've been keeping records from the 1890s. So we lucked out, really, in effect, last year. What are you and your friends over at the University of Arizona saying about this upcoming season, which will begin, we hope, in late June?
All right. So I have an emotional response to this, which is I'm always optimistic because the monsoon, I mean, there's a lot of, when you study climate, a
lot of moving parts.
Well, there's a lot of moving parts, but also when you study climate, there's a lot of sort of negative narratives in the media that you have to talk about: sea level rise, you know, drought and dwindling water supplies. But the monsoon itself is something that, like, I think fills people full of optimism. There's no villain with the monsoon. So I always like talking about the monsoon. So I'm optimistic, but it's not a feature that scientifically we have a really good handle on how to predict months in advance or even like weeks in advance. And we've talked about this a number of times. There, like you said, there's just a lot of moving parts. That being said, yeah, last year was a historical season, not just in Tucson, as you mentioned, but across the entire U.S. monsoon region. I, you know, it was, by certain metrics, it was, you know, the top two or top three wettest monsoons. So I would think it would be exceedingly or very unlikely that we'd have a monsoon like last year.
Yes.
And
just the whole law of averages.
And to me,
if I were a betting man, I would be not betting on anything like the third biggest rainfall production in history.
Exactly. And you know, as a climate scientist, I always tend to gravitate toward, as you said, the average.
So, yes.
But I'm optimistic that, you know, it'll be a good, vigorous season, and, you know, we'll get some rain, and we'll just hope that it's one that is vigorous and, you know, doesn't create too many flash flood events that can be quite destructive and harmful. But I would say, you know, it's always a little bit of a folly to try to bank on what the monsoon is going to do months in advance. So.
But why wetter than normal was the prediction from the Climate Prediction Center?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, they did this last year too, and they got it right. So, so those forecasts, I mean, they're looking at a lot of different things. They're looking at, you know, what's going on in the tropical Pacific Ocean. They're looking at, you know, snowpack conditions. There's a whole bunch of like metrics that they've developed, you know, the science has developed that tries to piece together like, well, how are monsoon seasons, the onset, the total and whatnot correlated with different features. And we've also got not just statistical models, but these dynamical models that actually code in like atmospheric dynamics, thermodynamics, and that sort of thing.
They even put in high winds in the spring as a possible factor.
Yes.
And we've had a few of those days lately.
So they're, those models are seeing something. I don't know what they're seeing, you know.
I'm seeing a lot of dust from the high winds. That's what I'm seeing. But I guess they have models for all of these little factors.
They do, but it's a little bit, I mean, having, you know, spent my career so far thinking about this, it's there are times when the models are better than others. Mm-hmm. And this is a time I would say it's probably not worth putting much stock in those. I mean, the models are going to produce something, you know, and that's what they're reporting on. But whether or not there's sort of robustness and whether or not those predictions hold up over time, you know, it's a different story. And I think when it comes to these predictions these far out for the monsoon, it's basically no better than flipping a coin. So
yeah,
your best bet is probably just to look at the average conditions and be like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit like that.
Right. When you think about the dismal 2020 with just one little over an inch and a half for our whole summer season. And then the following year, we have this incredibly robust rainy season.
Yeah.
So you would think, if I was going to predict, I'd say average.
Yeah. Yeah.
This year, average would be, I don't know, maybe 7 inches, something like that.
Six for Tucson at the airport, but it depends on where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you don't have strong indications that allow you to hedge your chances one way or the other, your best estimate is to look at what occurs most often in mm-hmm. the past. Mm-hmm. And the monsoon produces these high variability, seasons of rainfall, you know, from, you know, there, you know, an inch in Tucson all the way up to, you know, 13, or, you know, it's quite a range. And yeah, I think, you know, if I had to make an estimate right now, I'd say probably in the, you know, 5 to 7 inch range.
I agree with you, and we'll come back, of course, and people will hold us to that, but I'd say 5 to 7. One thing I don't like about this prediction, the average high is going to be above normal for the Southeast Arizona. I hate to see that.
Well, yeah, and so this is where you also have to think about, well, what is being forecasted, and what are the mechanisms that produce that those forecasts? And there is a difference between temperature and precipitation. Mm-hmm. Precipitation, there's a lot of, like you said, moving parts to it to get the monsoon right. Now, temperature spatially is much more coherent and a simple process. And we can say that to a pretty high degree of certainty that temperatures going forward are going to be warmer than like the average of the 1991 yes. to 2020 period, simply because we know that the world is warming, and yeah. that's the trend. And yeah. so the trend here is dominating that signal. And so I would be betting on that.
I'd bet on that one too. A very hot summer. How about that? Zach Guido, always a pleasure. Great information. That's going to do it on behalf of Dr. Guido. John on the other side of the glass. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon.